Welcome to the Fundraising Leadership Podcast, where we talk about topics related, of course, to fundraising, leadership, management, and coaching. My name is David Langiuli, and I'm here with my good friend and colleague, Michelle Malloy-Dillon. Hey, Michelle.
Hey, David. So you and I are here with Sharon Kittroser, and she's a fundraiser who got her start working in media sales for over 25 years. And she's experienced lots of joy using her skills at both small and large nonprofits. And she likes to say that if you can sell air, you can sell anything. She's the co-founder of Team Cat and Mouse, where she works with nonprofits to change the way they train their teams. Welcome, Sharon.
Thank you. Very happy to be here.
So you wrote a blog for Fundraising Leadership about your background in the world of sales and how it's related to coaching and training in nonprofits. And, you know, we all know that there's a lot of turnover. There is a lot of turnover happening right now. July of 2021, sort of post-COVID, a lot of people are deciding they, you know, want something more meaningful in their career. And so tell us a little bit about that connection. Like, what did you learn from your background in sales that's helpful for leaders in the nonprofit world to know about retaining people?
As I said in the blog, I got a very rocky start in my career, graduated college, applied for a lot of jobs, saw a lot of opportunities, and learned a lot of lessons very quickly. The first lesson was don't take a job unless you've been to the office. And learned that when I arrived my first day at a radio station in central New York that was at the transmitter point at the top of a mountain where I once found a real life snake in my office. And it was just a little hut. It was horrifying. A two-story hut, which makes you wonder about how the second story stayed up. I learned there was a lot of drama, a lot of story, a lot of everything you've seen on WKRP in Cincinnati and more. And I met my sales manager and I met the general manager. They sent me out on my first day with a cassette tape by someone who's still out there named Pam Lantos, who I thought was terrific. Apparently she's a very tiny woman with very large hair. And Pam, what I got that I use to this day in there was a line she said, she sold gym memberships. Mm. And everyone kept telling her what she couldn't do. And she finally said, you know what? Don't tell me what I can't do till after I've tried it. And I've taken that with me through my whole career. And I still suggest to people that is see what you can do based on who you are.
So I like what you're saying there in that story of that piece of advice from the 80s, which is the era of big hair and cassette tapes, which I think fondly about every day.
Yeah.
But what I think there's so much preparation and analysis. This is in the field of fundraising these days. So there's so much like straitjacketing of fundraisers, like just go try something for Christ's sake.
Well, I don't really think it's the same thing. Here's why. I believe in hiring attitude and training skills. Let me first say I have always believed in that. And that, you know, it takes bravery to pick up a phone and call strangers. And I will take that every day and teach you what to say when you get the stranger on the phone. So that go try something is how I would hire someone. You know, I look for people, what I look for when I hire, which is a really important part of retention. I ask people very specific questions. I ask them some very odd ones, like what does your closet look like? Because then you know if they're neat or messy. I ask them, what was their favorite teacher in high school? Because I know if they like the teacher who pushed them to be better or the teacher who said, you're so pretty, you're so smart. No, I want someone who said, I loved this teacher because they made me be the best that I could be. Sometimes people offer to tell you about a coach. If they offer to tell you about their second grade teacher, don't hire them. It's a very specific question. So that tells you how they like to be coached. But then I asked questions about their shopping cycle. I asked questions about how they like, how they are with rejection, because that's all part of what goes into the job. And if you get a person who doesn't take things personally, who isn't out to make friends with everyone in the world unless they're on the same path to what the friendship's going to develop into. And you get someone who's brave, you don't have to worry about them trying something new. They can't wait to try something new.
Yeah.
They want to be the first down the path of, you know, of change and excitement. So,
well, finding the right person who can grow into the job, Sharon, which is what I think you're pointing to, like has, you know, is brave enough to try new things and is for the organization to be able to support them in that. You're right. All the different particles, all the smaller things, all the specific skills for the role, for the job can be taught if it's someone who's willing to learn and willing to try new things.
Yeah, and somebody who's wants has the drive. So when you're in straight up sales, and this is where people say sales isn't like fundraising, I will argue that all day long. So much is similar. You have to call strangers. You have to be able to talk about what you're selling or a mission that is that you are so proud to represent. You have to have a spotless follow-up and you have to be able to ask for money. It's a lot of similarities. Here's one of the different things though, is that you want to develop and you want to bring them along so that they stay with your mission and they talk about your mission. And, you know, raising great fundraisers to me is a joy.
Well, fundraising all comes down to relationship, building relationship with donors.
That's the fundamental distinction, if there is one. I know that there's relationship. Look, I also came up the sales and marketing route, Sharon, and I'm still doing sales today. And we just call it by a different name. We call it enrollment. But anyway, sales by a different name. But I will say that the fundamental distinction for me is that sales tends to be, not absolutely, more transactionally oriented. And fundraising tends to be, especially at the major gifts level or principal gifts level, more relationship oriented. So
I have to 100% disagree with that.
I know you're going to disagree, but I'm not going to let you disagree.
I totally disagree with that.
I'm not going to let you disagree because this is our podcast. Sorry. And
it's David's world.
It's my world. So you don't get to disagree in my world. But there was somewhere I was going with this around me. Oh, yes. Sorry. Around retention. So because fundraising is fundamentally more relationship driven than transaction driven, although transactions happen, length of tenure in the role is essential for success. And that's something I think we do agree upon.
You know, it's really funny because I don't think I was your regular fundraiser. I don't think I'm your regular salesperson because
you're not your regular person at all.
Thank you.
I know we actually appreciate
that's what we love
that
about you. Me. Yeah, absolutely.
I was raised by a dad and a grandpa who were in sales, and my grandfather, Sam Dones, used to talk about how he called on J.C. Penney. And Mr. Penny took him to lunch. That's the way I grew up, that whatever you are, you have to have a relationship with whoever you're selling to know what they need to buy. And although Mr. Penny and my grandfather are long gone, I still talk to clients that I work with in the early 90s from New York, because you build this relationship that's based on understanding each other and how to do the best job for them. You know, I got a call today from a donor from my last job who is very touched by what's going on in South Florida with the building collapse because she trusted me. I was her trusted advisor to tell her who to give money to support what's going on in Surfside with the building collapse. So the trick is partially building a relationship in either capacity that really allows you to understand why that they want to be part of your mission or the why they want to give. And I know that's very cliche now. However, I language it a little bit different. In corporate work, we used to call it VBR, valid business reason. Why am I calling you to help my charity? How will it help you too? Like, I'm really, corporate is my, and partnerships is my, what I'm very best at. and people just go, give me a check to help my mission. Well, what are you trying to do? You're trying to have engagement by your employees? Are you trying to tell the world? Are you trying to be internal and just, you know, do something that's important to your company or mission match somehow? With my business partner, Amy, we sat and we talked about what was the VBR for personal and individual fundraising. And we said, your very best reason. If you're not asking the questions on what's the very best reason you want to give, you're never going to build that relationship that David's talking about.
Yeah. And I'm going to side with Sharon on this, David. I'm sorry. I'm taking sides. Yeah. Get ready.
You take all the sides want.
You know, I had a career as a professional photographer, entrepreneur for over 25 years. So of course, sales was a big part of me surviving and creating a successful business. And whenever it came to meeting with a client and talking to them about what, you know, why they wanted photographs taken and what was the story they were trying to tell, it was all about this was absolutely coming from a relationship perspective. I mean, the end result was a transaction, David. The end result was money is going from point A to point B.
Whether you have a good relationship, there are multiple transactions.
Yes,
when you have a good relationship. So
right.
Again,
but there has to
say,
be this alignment on, you know,
of course,
whether you can align on things.
And what I was saying is not in the realm of absolutes. It's in the shades of gray here.
Just yes, it is.
Distinguish it for you both again, but sales is...
Plus, I like publicly disagreeing with you, David, because it's fun.
Of course.
I just like hearing him saying shades of gray. I'm like, wow, this just took an odd turn.
Right. But, no, it's all good.
in my direct experience of both these realms, sales has more of a transactional nature to it, and fundraising has more of a relationship. In both cases, there are relationships and transactions.
Yes.
And in the business that Michelle and I are in, where we are enrolling people in possibilities of working with us as coaches, this is all about relationship. Mm-hmm. So more so than even you know, we have the privilege of getting very intimate with clients in our one-on-one coaching work. And so maybe it's even better to just say on the realm of intimacy, mm-hmm. And we're still doing sales today, or fundraising, or whatever you want to call it. We like to call it enrollment. Mm-hmm. You get very intimate with clients in the work that we do. And so these are some of the most satisfying, deep and personal relationships I've developed in my life. So So this is definitely a sort of a spectrum here of what we're talking about. But in any of these cases, I'd like to bring us back to this discussion about retention, because it is so important in any of these realms, again, to have some stickiness with people, like to do what you're up to.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So tell us a little bit, Sharon, about how does your work really help nonprofits retain employees, and like, what's the specific things that you're able to help people with?
So if you look into why people stay in their jobs, the number one thing is money. We all know that. Nothing I do will fix that. I have nothing to do with that. But right followed by that is advancement in career, training, and the people you work with.
Yeah.
So what does training do? It gives you an idea that you can advance. I was at a large charity, and they wouldn't advance people unless they had already been a development director. Mm-hmm. So everybody had to leave when they got to that point. Mm-hmm. Not very forward thinking. Mm-hmm. Then you look at somebody and you say, what do I see in you? What are the characteristics that I see in you? What can we build on to take what you're good at and make you very much better at it? And third, and this one is a lesson from 2020, if I have ever seen a lesson. So how many nonprofits do you guys know who were based on event fundraising who had a really bad year last year?
Yeah.
So the other amount of freedom you give people is, let's say you're the very best at individual fundraising. Well, you should also be very good at planned giving, because they go together. You should understand events, you should understand corporate, and you should have someone you can bring in if those are the opportunities that arise. You don't have to be very best at everything, but you need to understand it. So then you start having a team that really, the people component, your boss believes in you. They want to make you better. They want to bring you to a new level. Plus you start working as a team. And you start wanting to help each other and bring each other to a new level. Plus, everybody wants to feel like the most special person in the class. And when you have somebody who is very best at planned giving, how important will they feel when they share their expertise? But what I've seen from my days in radio and even more so in nonprofit is management is strapped with 100 million things to do. They hire people, they don't train them, they don't even teach them to tell the story of their mission. Then they go out, they hit the wall, they come back and they're told, well, you know, that's not how to do it. You're wrong.
Yeah.
And then they feel like garbage and then they leave.
Right. I mean,
or they tell your boss tells you, you can't give a 10% discount. You go back to the customer and you say, I can't give you that 10% discount. They kick you out and then you smash your head through the windshield.
Which you forgot my chin.
Oh, the chin. Oh, sorry.
My head through the windshield.
Yeah, well, you must have been driving a VW Bug. My father did that too.
I was driving a Ford Pinto, the cars that are so very famous for blowing up.
And it didn't get blown up? You didn't get blown up? Okay, good for you.
No, because this story would have had a different ending.
Yeah.
I thought we were talking to the reincarnation of Sharon.
One is enough.
This points so much to, you know, training and being able to align people with the story of the mission of the organization. Like, it's so important. And in that example that you give in your blog, from your very first job, like, you just went out and just started trying things, but no one gave you any kind of guidelines, like nothing, no kind of mentorship in that situation.
Now, that was a really long time ago, right?
Yes.
And all these years later, while I was writing that blog, all I could think of is he was, you know, now that I was a manager way longer than I was ever in sales or ever in fundraising, I'm sorry, that was mean-spirited. It was inappropriate and it was bad, bad management. And those parts can be fixed. But what happened is I almost left the business. Mm-hmm. I was physically injured. I was emotionally freaked out. I was a kid. And, you know, it wasn't only these, like, you know, I had a boss later on who's a very nice man. I said, a client I've been trying to get to wants to meet afterwards for drinks. And then he wants me to see his new apartment he just decorated. My boy said, good luck. Do you want to know how that story ends?
Did you have your teddy on the back of the door? You knew I was going to bring that in. You knew I was going to bring that in. I had to do it. When you were telling me another story, you were like saying, yeah, somebody I used to work with.
Yeah, radio's pretty crazy.
And I was
crazy,
thinking it was a teddy bear, but you were talking about something else.
Yeah.
Before we hit the record button, we had all sorts of interesting conversations.
stories from the 80s. You gotta love
them. Well, actually, I just have to finish this story because there was such a good point in it. So I go there, guy drops his pants. I said, I'm going to go get my, I don't know, it was like 24 years old. I was very mature for my age. And I said, okay, I'm going to go get my raincoat and I'm going to leave and I'm going to call you tomorrow and you're going to give me an order. And I don't exactly know where the skill of blackmail came into my life.
You weren't trained on that. And I'm sure you don't train fundraisers on blackmail, but it was good that you in the moment knew how to deploy it.
Yeah.
Well, what was really funny is I then called one of my mentors. I'm very big on mentors. That's a different blog. Like, I called one of my mentors. I said, this just happened. This is what I said. And this is where you have to believe in divine intervention. She goes, that's really weird. I'm interviewing at that ad agency tomorrow. I might have to mention this.
Oh, yeah. There you go. And this is how not to retain employees.
No, sometimes you want employees to leave.
Yeah, yeah. But
it was
but
a different
what I
day.
I like what I like about what you're sharing in these horror stories that could become a horror film with humor. I think you should, there's something there for you. Hello.
Screenwriting, here you come. Yeah.
There you go. Is that many of us have experienced similar, you know, horror stories of having managers like that. And Janice and I, you know, talk about this, our other partner, like you do learn, as you start to grow, you do learn from those experiences. And, you know, this is part of the work that Michelle and I and Janice and Margaret do with professionals in the front, in the nonprofit world, is they really, they either have had good or bad or skillful or unskillful role models, and maybe a mix of both, but no one really teaches you how to be a manager or a leader. And so we're trying to make an impact there. You know, you come up, you learn from these experiences, you say, well, I'm not going to do it that way, but there are skillful ways of being a manager. There are skillful ways of leading. And I'd like you to say a little bit about that, if you would.
Well, you know, what's really interesting, and I'm not sure I answered Michelle's question, is we come in, the leaders, we assume you have spoken to them already and got them online and got them ready to go. It's the mid leaders and it's the, you know, the online fundraisers. We teach them so they're powerful. We teach them so, and then have some, we call it office hours, so we can follow up, because if your manager isn't an expert on plan giving, don't worry, my partner Amy is, or if you're not, your manager's not an expert on corporate, I am. So that's great. But here's the part that involves leadership. I somewhere in my career realized that if I hired very smart people and made them very good at their job, I wasn't there till 9 o'clock at night. Mm-hmm. I'm happy to say I figured that out before I had children. So I would hire people smarter than me, faster than me, better than me. And then I'd give them everything I had to make them the best team in town. And it worked at both in my radio days, and it worked in my fundraising days. I want my guys to be confident and secure with the story they tell and the skills needed to be really successful at their jobs, because A, then they want to stay because they feel magical and important.
I want to pause you for 1 second, Sharon, because you're making a really important point that as leaders, it is so important to hire people who are smarter, more knowledgeable, better than you in so many ways. And sometimes that can be a really difficult thing for a leader to like check their ego and say, it's okay that this other person is better than me at these things. But it is so, so important. So I just wanted to highlight that.
Well, it's similar to having kids. And as we discussed before the podcast, we all have kids of a similar age. And what parent doesn't want better for their children? Mm-hmm. I wanted my kids to have a better education than me. I wanted them to go to a better college than me. I laugh because my daughter ended up in advertising sales. How did this happen? But don't worry, she won't be learning from cassette tapes. And it's just so amazing to me that people's ego stands in the way of a successful enterprise. Because here's the joke, the best leaders are the ones who love to give it away. Mm-hmm. Yep. One quick story, I was meeting when I worked for the Walt Disney Company, I was meeting the upper management. It was Christmas time. It was at this very famous hotel in Palm Beach called The Breakers. Looks like magic at Christmas time. And it was the president of ABC, and he just wanted to tell me what a great job I was doing at Radio Disney. And every time he said, Sharon, what I really like that you're doing, and I love very specific compliments, you know, like, this is very specific. I like what you're doing with this. And he went on. And every time I give it away, I'd say, well, it's really the staff in Chicago that's doing such a great job. That Barb, she's amazing. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, it's just, and he finally looked at me and he said, can you stop that? And I said, I can't, because if it was just me, it would be one thing, but it's not. This is, we increased billing 1,100%. So I was definitely on his happy side of him. And he said, you know, if without a leader, nothing happened. These are the same people. You are the difference. I said, that's because I gave them directions and the tools to get the job done, not because I did anything. And we ended like that, because I wasn't going to give up, because the manager sees the magic in their people and wants to make them better. Most managers, I think a nonprofit, just don't have the time or the bandwidth. So that when we do our office hours, we also keep the manager in the loop so that they can, you know, if we have a call once a week, the other 4 days, they have someone to connect with.
Yeah. And the really big overarching dream here, and David and I share this too at Fundraising Leadership, is like, the whole point is we want people to be able to show up at work, to be aligned with their mission, to create connection with each other to get the work done, to look forward to going to work every day, and to have the right skills and training to be able to get the job done. Like all of these different steps. Really, you know, this is our life. You know, COVID has taught us that life is short. Like, this is our life. Like, no kidding. Let's make these experiences with colleagues, with fundraisers, with donors, like, let's make it enjoyable. Let's keep the mission in mind. And let's be able to have these clear communication skills so that we can ask for help or see what needs to be done. And let's let go of those bad 80s, you know, pants have been dropped in the evening after drinking too much crap. Like, that's not going to retain anybody. And, you know, like, that's, you know, whatever. That's not conscious behavior. That's something else. So this is what we're trying to build, is this world where we're all want to show up and really be engaged.
I think there was a really unique opportunity during the lockdown. I had one specific gal named Brianna who worked for me. She was our community liaison. She went to chamber meetings and all that kind of stuff, and worked on our walks. And so all of a sudden she had seriously nothing to do. And she said to me, or very little to do. I said to her, okay, we have a year. What do you want to learn? And what do you want to become great at? And she said, I want to learn about partnerships. Mm-hmm. Great. And she spent the year just asking and working really hard, because she knew she had a chance to learn something completely different than what she knew and add it to her resume of what I'm very smart at. And I, you know, it took a special her, because it's back to that permission to coach. You got it. The first day she started, she said, what's the most important thing I need to know to work here? I said, you learn something new every day. I learn something new every day. Be open to learning something new every day. I mean, I worked at a bone marrow registry. I had to learn about science. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you mentioned, like, give each other permission to coach. I know there was something that you wanted to give our audience a chance to try, Sharon. What do you want to send the audience away with?
I'm going to give a footnote that I learned this from the former president of CBS, Scott Herman. And Scott, during a conversation once, when I was saying I really wanted to bring my staff, and at this point I had 7 radio stations under me, I wanted to bring them to the next step. He said, the only way to do that is to get permission to coach, which means getting people to say, I understand permission to coach means maybe you'll tell me something good, but you may have to add something I could do better and different. And I try really hard to say better and different. And I start every day with, now that we have our own business, I joke, me and the mouse in my pocket have a meeting every morning and discuss what we could do better and different today.
Yeah.
And, you know, so what can you do better and different today? What can you learn from? What can you repeat? Because it worked really well. And have them say, I want to be better. I want, you know, maybe you can't control how much money they make. Got it. Nonprofits will never pay people what you make in the for-profit world. But there are people who are changing the world, making a difference to this the mission they're working for. That's more than money. Being appreciated, knowing that everything you do is a path to doing something else. You know, and I think for this younger generation, it's a challenge to sometimes coach.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you don't get permission, you're gonna get. Oh, is there, how do you spell that?
So I love what you're saying. So yeah. So ask for permission to ask some coach-like questions for people, to be inquisitive and curious about what they need, what will get them excited about their role.
I might tighten this up a little bit. So if you're a leader, manager in the audience, design an alliance with your team and ask for permission to coach them. If you are a frontline fundraiser in the audience, have design with your manager or the leader and give permission for them to coach you. That's what I think what you're saying.
You don't have somebody on the staff. So I have a very clear picture of what I think our consultancy offers, which is you guys are vision and mission. We're like, how to do it. We're much more tactical. How to do it. Get out today. Here's what you have to do. You have to make, you know, I love sales math. I have a very healthy relationship with sales math because you have to make this many calls and you have to reach this many people and you start to see patterns and it takes the crazy out of fundraising. When you know, I called 20 people, I got to 2 people and 1 gave me money. You are powerful. You take the emotion out of it. I love sales math. And until I learned it, I was a lot. It's the way to keep the roller coaster with smaller, you know.
So there's your next ebook title. I love fundraising math. There you go.
Yeah.
I think you got that one for your audience. Yeah.
Good. It's funny. I had a conversation on LinkedIn with someone who said to me, I know sales math. You just have them pitch 3 times as much as you need. And only because my business partner said, don't answer that. Because I was like, oh, wow, you have all the people who work for you with the same experience and the same closing rate and the same kind of donors. That's magical. How'd you do that? You know, every person is a person. They deserve to know their own sales mail. They deserve to know their own, how they could be better. It's not, but you know, if you don't know how to do one type of fundraising, invite a consultant in. Invite somebody in who will take this burden of training off of you and give you back a trained staff.
Yeah.
You know, start with onboarding. I am so sick of onboarding that includes where the bathroom is and here's your insurance package. Because that's what people think onboarding is. It's not what onboarding is. You need to learn the mission. You need to know who the players are. You need to know how you fit into the story, how you tell the story, or you can't get started on the right foot.
Yeah. Great, great tips, Sharon. And thank you so much for being our guest today on the Fundraising Leadership Podcast. And we have an ebook, our free resource of this week is our free ebook called Managing for Retention that has some of the same tips that Sharon mentions in here, some tips that David and I and Janice, who've written the book, suggest as well. So I will put the link to that free ebook in the show notes of the podcast. And this podcast is brought to you by Fundraising Leadership. We provide unique coaching and training programs that powerfully transform how you work in order to get results. Please subscribe if you haven't already. You can find us on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music Podcasts, and Spotify. And if you're enjoying the show, please rate and review so that others can find us. Now go put it into practice. Yeah.